Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 183 for January 25th, 2009, on location at the Victoria Whiskey Festival in Victoria, British Columbia. Now, Victoria is tucked in between Seattle and Vancouver at the southern tip of Vancouver Island, and it's full of whiskey lovers. There's the Victoria Single Malt Club and the local chapter of the Companions of the Quake, and the West Coast Whiskey Society is based just up the coast in Vancouver. Malt maniac Lawrence Graham organizes the festival, and in fact, this may be one of the few whiskey festivals where you'd find ticket scalpers.
I think this is the first year that the scalpers have shown up and that we've seen it.
How fast did tickets sell out for this festival?
We sold the bulk of our tickets in about 3 hours.
Now, for people who would be coming out possibly next year, let's plan ahead to 2010. This festival is going to occur during the Vancouver Olympics, right?
I haven't heard about the Olympics. Yes, it's going to be during the Olympics.
Right. So this will be a perfect opportunity for somebody to take the seaplane down from Vancouver who's coming in for the Olympics, take a couple of days, and come down here for the festival, right?
That's right. That would be a good trip. It would be more fun here than at the Olympics.
Less crowded, too, I would imagine.
That's right.
Now, what are the dates for next year?
We're still working with the hotel and dates and everything, but it'll be the same weekend in January as this one. So whatever that is.
Victoria is actually a relatively small town, maybe 70, 80,000 people. But for some reason, there seems to be just an overflow of whiskey lovers in this town. Can you explain that?
I think we're a capital city, so we have a lot of government workers, and they really need to drink a lot because of their jobs. I don't know. It's been amazing. There's a lot of enthusiasm. But the city is bigger than that. The greater Victoria area is just over 300,000. So, but there's a lot of private liquor stores, a lot of government liquor stores, and, there's a lot of interest in whiskey, all types of whiskey. So,
tell me how this festival has evolved over the last 4 years, because I remember doing the first interview with you before the first festival in 2006. We're here 4 years later. You've been twisting my arm for 3 years to get me here. Tell me how this festival has evolved.
Well, it's still the same 3 days, but what we've done is on Friday night we've gone to two events, big events, when we had one when we started, and we've added more master classes as distillers have found out about us. And then now this year is the first time we've added the fourth tranche of master classes starting at 11:15 in the morning. And then we moved to two ballrooms a few years ago from one ballroom. And then as we've grown and got our confidence, then we've added more tickets. But we are essentially at our maximum for this venue, and we're not leaving the Hotel Grand Pacific because they're so good to us. So we love it here.
And that's basically about 500 tickets for the mass tasting, which, as you mentioned, sold out in about 3 hours. But with 24 master classes during the day, that's something any whiskey lover could be interested in, right?
That's right, yeah, and it's there's so many master classes that they can only take four, so there's a lot of agony over which choice to take.
Canada is known for its whiskies, but most of the distilleries are based in Ontario and Alberta. Construction is now underway on what will be Vancouver Island's first single malt whiskey distillery. Andrew Curry is building the Shelter Point Distillery near Victoria.
We've now got the foundations in. The stills are being ordered from Forsyth in Scotland and will be arriving in October. They're also going to produce, we think, the mash tun. Other less important equipment is being made here locally, and we should be distilling by the fall.
And how long before you actually get the first single malt out?
Well, I'm going to bring a three-month-old spirit to next year's festival. I can't wait to try that. But I think we'll wait another 8 years before we bottle it.
Now, how hard has it been to try to get a single malt distillery built on Vancouver Island?
Not that hard. The government, provincial government, have been very supportive. The local community is very supportive as well. So it's been pretty good.
But it's taken you a while, right?
It's taken us a while, yeah. Finance. But it's all coming together now.
Are you having fun with this project?
Loving it. Loving every bit. It's really good.
What are you hoping to accomplish with this? Because there's only one other single malt as of right now produced in Canada, so this is sort of a really untapped market. What are you hoping to accomplish?
I want to make a single malt that would rank with Scotland's best, and I think we can. We're going to grow the barley right on the farm site. I've had all the water analyzed in Scotland, and it should be water that makes a good whiskey. I don't know what it's going to taste like or its character. I think probably something like a Highland malt. That's what I want. A really good Vancouver Island single malt.
And being along the seashore in Vancouver Island will help at least with a little bit of some of the seashore influences, right?
Yeah, the maturation is going to be vital, and you're right. There will be a lot of influence on the sea. It's not as windy as Isla, of course, and it's not as tempestuous as Isla, but I think we will have quite a note from the sea coming to the barrels.
Where will it be sold originally?
Locally, round here. There'll be enough whiskey enthusiasts, I hope, on Vancouver Island. We're only making 90,000 litres a year. That's against an industry average of 1 million litres a year. So we'll be focusing on the domestic market, principally.
Canadian whiskies tend to be extremely underrated, but that makes them a great value. Ron Struthers recently retired as the master distiller at Highwood Distillers, south of Calgary.
I think we're making some really, really great quality Canadian whiskies. We're starting with Prairie Grains, and the distillery itself is owned by Canadians, which makes us quite unique.
And the distillery is located basically just south of Calgary, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
So tell me what you've got three different lines of whiskies, but each one is very unique in its own different way, right?
Exactly. We have our Bar Grade whiskey, which in BC here, it is our Potter's line. I think it's quite a rich whiskey, has good flavor, and is ideal for consuming in the bars. Our Centennial is a 10-year-old whiskey. Again, it's made with different grains than our Potter's whiskey. But again, what we try to do is we try to get purity and actually flavor. All aged in oak, the same type of oak barrels.
And that has a lot of wheat in it, doesn't it?
It does. It has wheat in it. And our third, and the one that we've just introduced here in BC and in Ontario, is our very, very aged 18 and 23-year-old whiskey that's now called Century Plus, 15 plus. So it's minimum 15 years, and we'll continue to produce this and bottle it. It's in an extremely high-end, attractive bottle, which we're very, very proud of. Again, at Highwood, we're proud of everything we produce.
But the thing I noticed about the Century is that it's selling in some Canadian markets for $30 a bottle. What makes Canadian whiskies such a great value?
I think for the amount of age that goes onto the bottle and the quality of what is there, it certainly would be extremely good quality compared with other whiskies of the world.
Moving away from Canadian whiskies and getting into the news of the week, Rosebank has been shut down since 1993, and now there's no chance that it will ever reopen. Newspapers in the area report that thieves have broken into the distillery, apparently many times, and stolen all of the copper from the stills and other equipment for scrap metal, leaving the distillery empty. I'm not a big fan of the death penalty, but in this case, I could see making an exception. Last September, we heard about Nika's whiskeys during the special coverage of Whiskey Live Paris. Now, there's a new expression from Nika, distilled in 1988, and aged in a combination of new wood, refilled wood, ex-bourbon, and sherry butts, and to top it off, a combination of peated and unpeated malts. It's bottled at a cask strength 55.8% ABV. There are 1,800 bottles for Japan and just 200 bottles going to Europe. It's available through La Maison de Whiskey in Paris for €220, or about $285 a bottle. Springbank is about to fire up the stills for the first time since June, when the distillery shut down because of high commodity prices. I had the chance to talk with Springbank's Peter Curry, who traveled all the way from Scotland to lead a master class here in Victoria.
We had, I think, about 50 tons of local barley that was, well, it was meant to get harvested in October. Or late September. I think it actually turned out to be late October by the time they actually managed to get the barley harvested. And I don't know how much you know about the making whiskey, but once you harvest barley, you then have to wait till it comes out of dormancy before you can start malting. So Frank McHardy and Stuart Robertson have been running about the distillery with little Tupperware tubs full of barley, trying to wait and see when it comes out of dormancy and when the barley is ready for the next stage and ready to start malting. And I've been away since the turn of the new year, but last time I spoke to Frank, the barley was pretty much good to go. So the guys should be starting malting. They possibly started last week since I've been out here. But if not, I would certainly say by the end of the month, that barley will be ready to be malted, and that should keep them going. You're doing well. They'll do 25 tons in a week, so they should be doing that for maybe 2 or 3 weeks to get all the barley malted, and that should give us 150 tons of barley that's then ready to start distilling. We've got 100 tons sitting there already, and this will supplement it, which then should keep the guys going.
And if I remember right, in one of the emails you told me that you guys are basically going to alternate the process and not basically do some malting, then distill, then malt more, and just work your way up. Or is that the way I understand it?
Yeah. When 5 years ago when I started at the distillery, they would malt and then they would distill. The same team of guys would switch alternately between the two. The malting is really the bottleneck that keeps our production down. Distilling-wise, we could make a lot more whiskey if we didn't insist on doing all the malting ourselves. And so Frank and Stuart are just going to scale it back a bit and start alternating between the two. The last couple of years, with the whiskey school running and these things, we've been doing both at the same time and making quite a lot of whiskey. So we'll start distilling again. We're not going to distill as much as we were previously at the moment, but we will be switching between malting and distilling and also doing distillation at Glengyle Distillery as well, and doing the malting at Springbank for production at Glengyle. So it won't be flat out. I think in the past, the guys have, when they were malting or when they were distilling, they were distilling 24 hours a day. They're now, I think, going to two shifts, so rather than the previous three shifts again, which will just keep our production low, but we will be making whiskey.
Now, what happens to the distilling school this year?
We won't be running the school this year. The unique thing about the whiskey school was that we were the only distillery in Scotland where you could do the entire production process. And Frank McHardy and Mr. Wright, the chairman of the company, have decided that they don't want to run the whiskey school unless we are able to offer the entire production process. And so, but there's not malting and distilling at the same time. That's not a possibility. That'll be the case for 2009. Frank is intending to be malting and distilling simultaneously in 2010. And as soon as that happens, we'll start offering out the places for the guys on the whiskey school. There was a lot of disappointment when we cancelled it. But, let's say we feel that in order to offer the maximum that Springbank experience, you have to be able to do both.
Now, there's one thing that's not going to disappoint Springbank lovers is this rumor that I hear about an 18-year-old Springbank coming out soon.
Yeah, this year is going to be a really exciting year for Springbank. We're launching the Springbank 18-year-old in March, I believe. Or we'll start bottling it in March. It probably won't hit the markets until kind of June time. An 18-year-old Springbank. I think this year we've got about 1,500 cases, and this is going to be a regular part of the range. We'll have about 1,500 cases a year from now on. This year's batch is actually some of the whiskey we're using is as old as 20. We've got some 89, some 90, and some 91. I believe that's all Frank's vatted together. That's this year's 18-year-old. Next year it will all be 18, and we're going to carry on with that product. And I've tasted this year's vatting, which is heavily sherried. It is an excellent example of Springbank. Next year's vatting, which is only 17 years old, I would say is even better. So there's good things to come. We've also got a Hazelburn 12-year-old coming out. Hazelburn, it's been 12 years now since the guys started making Hazelburn, and that's again, the samples that I've tried, the vattings that Frank and Stuart have done, I think people will be really impressed with what we've got there.
And for people who are not familiar with Hazelburn, tell me about it.
Well, Hazelburn is really Frank McHardy's baby. You know, Frank was a distillery manager at Bushmills for 10 years. He was making unpeated triple distilled whiskey. The Mull of Kintyre is only, 15 miles or so from Northern Ireland. And when Frank came back over to Springbank, we have three stills. We have three stills at Springbank. We do a unique 2.5 distillation for Springbank. We were making heavily peated double distilled long row. And Frank brought his knowledge of making Bushmills and decided to have a shot at making a triple distilled whiskey in Campbelltown. And that was in 1997. And we released, the standard release is an 8-year-old. That's the standard age that we released the Hazelburn at. And this is the first year that we're going to have a 12-year-old Hazelburn. It's really, I guess you could say it's our tribute to the Irish whiskies and the way that they're made over there, using Frank's experience of making Irish whiskey. And I think in my experience, Hazelburn is a bit more, it's still a bit more robust than Bushmills. It's definitely still got that Springbank, I don't know whether you want to call it body or terroir or what you would call it. The soul of Springbank is still in there. That similarity that runs between Springbank, Longrow and Hazelburn, and even Kilkerran and you can possibly even say Glen Scotia, that Campbelltown style is definitely apparent in the Hazelburn, but it's a lighter style of Springbank without any peat.
Now, where will the 12-year-old be distributed?
Again, the Hazelburn is to all intent and purposes is distributed worldwide with all the Hazelburn products we've released. We send them out. It'll definitely be coming to Canada. It'll definitely be going to North America. The production is still quite. It's not huge production. Therefore, it is going to be only available from your whiskey specialist stores. But you know that these stores will get it. The big stores in the US. You know. Park Avenue, Sam's, Binnie's, all of these guys will have an allocation, and likewise it will be coming certainly to Alberta and hopefully into BC as well in Canada, and then all of our the usual suspects in Europe, Royal Mail Whiskies, Loch Fyne Whiskies, the Cadenhead stores, all of these guys will have it as well, so it should be going distributed that folk can certainly get it.
Any other surprises coming?
We've got as we speak, we're bottling the next in our series of wood expressions. We do one release a year of a wood expression. Last year was the Long Row Gaia in Gaia Barolo casks, which was very well received. And this year we've done a Springbank in Madeira. It's been maturing in Madeira wine casks. It's not a finish. It's 11 years old and it's been 11 years in Madeira wine casks. And I used it in a tasting the other night for the whiskey club in Vancouver. I know it is coffee cream. That was the overpowering note that came through for me was this fantastic creamy coffee flavour. It's pretty interesting. So I think folk will like that. We've also got this year is the first. Full release of Kilkerran from Mitchell's Glengyle Distillery, which we opened in 2004. The Kilkerran Work in Progress, as it's going to be called, will be a five-year-old Kilkerran, bottled at 46%, and that's going to be available from mid-May. We'll be bottling it, and so again, it'll probably be a couple of months after that before it really hits the market, but. This will be the start of it. We're doing 1,500 cases of Kilkerran this year, and we're going to keep rolling that on until we come out with the Kilkerran 12-year-old, which will be the standard age that we'll be releasing Kilkerran at. And then at the end of the year, we do another small release of Campbelltown Loch 30-year-old. We released some in December this year, or December 2008, and I believe we're already sold out. So I think hopefully everybody will be waiting for the 2009 release. So that's our plans at the moment.
I don't go more than a few weeks without mentioning a new whiskey from Brooklatty, and got the chance to taste the recent X4 and Octomore releases this weekend with Brooklatty's Andrew Gray.
Octomore, the anticipation was like nothing we've experienced. We received thousands of emails from people all over the world saying, when will Octomore come to our country? And the unfortunate thing was there was a delay because the bottle comes from overseas, and the glass supplier did not provide the quantity that we needed, that we were expecting. So we've had to ship it in two stages, two consignments, and it was late in the year, in early December. So, but the good thing is that consumers didn't really care. They were, as soon as it arrived, whether it was arriving December or January or February, whatever, they're going to buy it. And I've given tastings with it in the UK, in Taiwan, and in America. And the response has been phenomenal. So,
and the X4?
X4 is an interesting one. It's not immediately apparent to everybody what X4 is. It does take some explaining. So in a retail store, they would call it a hand-sell item. You have to spend a little bit of time to explain what it is. And in tastings, the response has been good. My recommendation, what I say to everyone at tastings is, every whiskey connoisseur, every whiskey enthusiast should have one bottle of X4 in their back bar at home. Why? Because that's the way that whiskey used to be drunk. It was drunk as spirit. And if you're going to drink any spirit at all, it has to be X4 because it's the only quadrupled one, which means it's a lot more palatable to drink. It has flavor in it, as opposed to neutral alcohol that many other kind of whiskey spirits taste like. This one comes with flavor.
What are you guys working on for 2009?
Oh, plenty of things. We're a bunch of guys that have basically come together. We're not friends. We've come together from different companies. But we all have different strengths. We're all passionate. What unites us? If we were ever to go on holiday together, it wouldn't work because we're all from different backgrounds. But we have this love of whiskey that unites us together. We are passionate about it. We have lots of ideas. So we're constantly working on new things. Why? Because we can. We're independent. We love whiskey. There's no such thing for us as always, I'll only drink a 10-year-old or only drink a 12-year-old. Come to my house, I've got hundreds of whiskeys for different occasions, different moods, different times of the day.
What's coming out in early 2009?
First of all, we're releasing a product called the Bruichladdich Classic, or to abbreviate it, Laddie Classic. And this is a whiskey that we have distilled ourselves since we bought the distillery. The quality of the wood that we've used, the quality of the distillate is superb. It is a relatively young one in comparison to other whiskey distilleries, but our young kicks ass. It is very good quality.
And this is the first distillate since you guys took over the distillery,
yes.
Right?
So our motto is dare to compare. Don't criticize saying it's only that age. Try it against your whiskey. Dare to compare.
What else is coming out this year?
A whole range. I don't want to release all our ideas because we did that once before, and we two other distilleries copied us. They tried to beat us to market with some ideas, but I'll give you a few. Another one we're developing is one that has been matured in a specific type of cask to provide a lighter flavor that is maybe aimed at a slightly younger audience, maybe early 30s or whatever, who are coming from maybe the wine market as they're developing their palate, and they're looking for a whiskey that maybe is a little off the wall, a little different to other whiskeys there, because they don't want to drink what their father's drinking or older brother. They want to drink something that is in keeping with their thoughts and ideas. And so we're developing something that we think younger members, women as well, people from really, regardless of sex, from of a certain type of age, where they're coming into the whiskey market for the first time, that they'll find it an enlightening stepping stone. They'll find it easy to drink.
How does this compare to Bruichladdich Waves, or is this Bruichladdich Waves?
No, it's not Bruichladdich Waves. Bruichladdich Waves is more for a whiskey enthusiast. It is medium peated. This would be a lightly peated version, but with fruity flavors. Waves has fruity flavors, but behind, underpinned behind those fruity flavors are peat smoke. And that's not for everybody. That's more for a enthusiast, a seasoned whiskey drinker. Whereas this other style we've developed is very easy to appreciate, very easy to drink. It should come with a health warning. So easy.
How much fun is it to work with the evil genius of Jim McEwen?
He's an incredible guy. I've known Jim for 19 years, I think it is now, because we were both at Morrison Bowmore. He's a man that you can't pin down. There's no such thing as a formula, no such thing as a recipe. There are good intentions, but he will continually create. That is good for us. That's not a negative thing, because the previous owners, Jim Beam Brands, closed the distillery down for a period of 6 years virtually. So we have a gap in the production. So we can't, there's no such thing as a formula really within Brooklady. We have to continually mix older age with younger age, mix different types of cask. So Jim is the man. He has the palate. His palate, I would rate with anyone in any walk of life within the drinks industry. I would rate his palate against anyone. It is just superb. I'll give you an example. When we introduced the second edition 20-year-old several years ago, and we had a range of casks in from France, Mourvedre casks from Perpignan in the south of France. And the next thing I knew, when he'd emptied the cask from bourbon cask, 20-year-old from bourbon cask into these casks, I thought we'd be waiting 6 months or a year, whatever. And within a very short time, we were bottling. I just couldn't believe it. I thought he'd lost the plot on this one, or for whatever reason, he wasn't interested, or he'd been traveling and someone else had misunderstood his instruction. And it wasn't just myself. The other two executive owners questioned him. And he said, just have a little faith, laddie. And so we all came over and we tasted it. He was right. He was absolutely right. So with our recasking program, there is no such thing as a uniform additional maturation. It all is done and regulated by Jim's palate. He will decide when the flavor, the additional layers of flavor that he's looking for, when they've been imparted into the whiskey. So we leave it to him. He's never let us down.
He's never come up with a crazy idea that you guys have said, no, Jim, you're not going to do that one.
Well, true, yeah. Yes, he has. So have I. So has Mark. So has Simon. Because we're so opposite, we're good control for ourselves. Our meetings are very passionate. Sometimes they've been very close to fights. Because someone is so passionate about an idea. But as a balance between the four of us, I think it works. So generally, if an idea is so off the wall, the other three will get it that it's so off the wall, and it won't happen.
What's the craziest idea that the three of you rejected?
I'll give you an example. It wasn't us that rejected it. It was the Scotch Whisky Association that rejected it. It was a superb idea for Celtic Nations, a product called Celtic Nations, where we were vatting Brooklady whisky and another style that we distill at Brooklady called Port Charlotte with an Irish whisky. But unfortunately, the laws laid down over years, hundreds of years or whatever, forbid importation of whiskey into Scotland that is not Scotch whiskey and vatting it in Scotland and then selling it, simply because the view is taken, what is it then? It's no longer Scotch whiskey. It's not Irish whiskey. What is it? Well, in our minds, it was Celtic whiskey, but that didn't wash. And so that was a great idea that actually we couldn't deliver.
But you did deliver it in another form later.
We're allowed to deliver the first one. It was supposed to be a series of 10. We couldn't deliver the other 9 because then we did realize what the law was. The law was explained to us, and we had to abandon those ideas. But we were going right round the world. In Canada, for example, Glenora Distillery, there's an association with the Scots. In America, Old Forester, there's an association with the Scots. And Evan Williams, an association with the Welsh, who are Celts as well. We were going right around the world with this idea, going to Australia, where, again, Scott's involved, going to New Zealand, going to Japan, where Scott's involved, going to India, where Scott's involved, right around the world, all mixing with Procladic. But we couldn't do it because it was illegal. So we had to say, fair cop, can't do it.
You guys just love the SWA, don't you?
Well, no, don't get me wrong. We're not members, but it's only a financial thing. We can't afford the membership fee. But they actually do a good job. They deserve the credit for lobbying governments around the world to reduce the tax on whiskey. So in India, for example, they've been very successful. In a variety of other countries, they've been successful. So they certainly have their place. Every industry needs an industry to look after their interests. We just didn't understand all the rules. We're creators, and we never like anyone to say no. But we understand the reasons why they did.
Last fall, we heard about the groundbreaking Indian single malts from Amrut Distillery in Bangalore. Those whiskies were introduced this weekend in British Columbia. And Ashok Chakalingam has two more expressions coming later this year.
We have now Amrut 46% Peter, and then the Amrut Fusion are the two new brands that we are going to introduce by middle of this year. And the response is absolutely phenomenal.
Let's talk about the peated 46%. This is the watered-down version, you might say, of the cask strength peated that you've had out for some time.
That's exactly the same. Both are same batch distilled about 5 years ago. And one at the full cask strength at 62.8%. The other one is reduced to 46%. But however, you see, compare and contrast between the peated 46 and the cask strength and see what's the variation it offers. When it is reduced, it's very subtle and it's very smooth and still got a lot of character. Whereas on the cask strength, it's a full-bodied flavor, a lot of complexity, and dominated by both fruitiness and the peatiness from the peated barley. It's amazing.
And let's talk about the fusion, because this may be the best whiskey, in my opinion, that you guys have come out with.
Yeah, it's basically what I would say the best of the both worlds. However, the fusion is basically the peated malt, which is distilled from the peated barley imported from Scotland and matured separately for over four and a half years. And then the Indian barley, distilled and matured it separately again for over four and a half years. And then blended together in the ratio of almost about approximately 75% of the Indian malt and 25% of the peated malt, and married into the cask for another 3-4 months. This particular brand is basically introduced to address the consumers who are not sure about the peated malt, or never tried the peated malt, or don't like the peated malt, still wanted to have the hint of peatiness and a lot of fruitiness. So the result is that's what you have tasted on the Amrut Fusion, which is at 50% again. It got a very light, subtle hint of peatiness, dominated by the fruitiness of the Indian barley.
And when will these be available finally?
This will be available within the next 6 months.
You're getting more really great response to these whiskeys, right?
That's true. We have had a kind of tasting with the Victoria Single Malt Club on last Sunday. I was addressing about 40 people, and they were saying on the single malt tasting session, that was the only session that they had 40 people in a single point in time. And the response was so amazing. Now they wanted to buy a couple of casks and bottle it exclusively for their single malt club. And it was really very pretty positive experience.
Just a reminder that an Amrut single cask bottling was named the best value daily dram in the 2008 Malt Maniacs Awards. Let's take a quick look now at the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. The Astor Center in New York City is holding a bourbon and bacon tasting on February 5th and is offering a special discount to Whiskey Cast listeners. The regular price is $45, but if you go to the Astor Center website and enter the coupon code WhiskeyCast, they'll take $20 off for a final price of just $25. By the way, listeners who checked the Whiskey Cast fan page on Facebook or signed up for Twitter feeds got advance notice of this deal, as did those who checked the Whiskey Cast website. Other events coming up, the Munich Whiskey Festival is this coming weekend. Tuttletown Spirits will be holding a tasting at Delaware Plaza Liquors in Del Mar, New York on February 7th. Whiskey Live Tokyo is February 22nd, and Whiskey Live London is February 27th and 28th. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quartercask.
Hi there, my name's John Campbell, Distillery Manager at Laphroaig Distillery. Become a friend of Laphroaig. Claim your own square foot of Islay at Laphroaig.com.
That's all for this special episode of WhiskeyCast. Special thanks to Lawrence Graham and all of the volunteers who put in their time to make this weekend special for everyone. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. You'll find links, the calendar of events, my whiskey ratings, the WhiskeyCast store, and a complete archive of past episodes at the WhiskeyCast website. The address is www.WhiskeyCast.com. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2009. I'm Mark Gillespie in beautiful Victoria, British Columbia, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.